He Said, She Said, or Technically Speaking and Simply Put.
Hello, Tracy.
Hello, Corey.
Hey, everybody. This is He Said, She Said, SNU. It's October 2014. Hip, hip, hooray.
Hip, hip, hooray is right. It's October, and the leaves are turning colors, and it's absolutely beautiful. It's getting cooler for sleeping, so I'm loving that. And I'm wearing my flannelette pajamas these nights. Just thought I'd say that.
And October, that's a special month.
That's a special month. That's our birthday month.
It sure is. Yeah, I always look forward to October. Something special about it. You can feel it in the air. And then that great big party, you know, we used to specialize in house parties for Halloween, didn't we?
Well, yeah, and I blew a few speakers in my day.
Yeah, you always blow speakers. You are a speaker blower.
Well, you know, when I like the music, I want it cranked. You know that, right?
Yeah, I know, me too.
Everybody else?
My eardrums are far, far away. They've been damaged.
Yes.
So, what's cooking?
Well, I thought I would talk about coconut flour because I had a little ordeal with coconut flour. I went to the health food store and I felt like baking one day. And so I went to the health food store and I bought all these wonderful, organic, beautiful flour and ingredients for my cake that I wanted to make. And I realized that in a hurry that coconut flour is very absorbent and it doesn't work like other flours. However, I should have done some Google and some research prior to using coconut flour, but now I'm an expert on coconut flour. So anyway, coconut flour is made from dried coconut solids. It's light and airy with a mild coconut scent and flavor. And coconut flour acts differently in batters than traditional grain flours, though you'll need to seek out recipes that adjust other recipe ingredients accordingly, which I didn't do. And I did learn in a hurry, as I mentioned, that coconut flour is very absorbent. So, for example, you'll need about a third of the amount of coconut flour to other gluten grain flours, or even other flours for that matter.
Well, it's got a different consistency to it also. Like when you bite into it, it's got a different mouthfeel, different texture.
Mm-hmm. And I did make a really nice pumpkin loaf or cake, and it was delicious. It was nice and creamy and really moist, but I kept adding and adding and adding. And what's interesting, you have a recipe that says maybe use a cup of coconut flour with 12 eggs. So the eggs are the binding. You bind it. But the other binders that you can use instead of eggs, if you don't want to have eggs, would be banana, pumpkin, ground flaxseed, agar agar, psyllium husks, or unflavored gelatin. The unflavored gelatin, however, is animal-based. So, you know, do a little research on it first. Coconut flour absorbs a lot of liquid, which is why most recipes call for a very small amount of flour. And as I mentioned, it'll use a lot of eggs in this for the binding. The reason so many eggs are needed is because the coconut flour doesn't call for xanthan gum or other gluten-free recipes do. Instead, you rely on the eggs, as I mentioned, to bind it together. Let's see. So a serving size, for example, of 100 grams of coconut flour would be about 413 calories. Woo doggy! The total fat is about 9 grams. Okay, saturated fat is 8 grams. Sodium, about 80 milligrams. Carbohydrate density would be 65 grams of carbohydrates in 100 grams of coconut flour and 9 grams of sugar and a whopping 19 grams of protein. So you're getting a real bang for your buck on that coconut flour.
Much higher than regular flour.
And it's low glycemic index, so it doesn't spike insulin, right? So it's a beautiful flour. Once you learn how to work with this coconut flour, you're not going to go back. You can use the coconut milk. You can use coconut sugar. You can use coconut oil and the coconut flour, and you can make a really nice, gluten-free, super-duper healthy cake or cookie. And then you add other ingredients to it if you want nuts and seeds or pumpkin or banana, raisins, whatever you want to add to it. You know what the beauty of it is? You're eating something that you know is good for your body. It's not detrimental. It's healthy. It's going to give you energy, sustainable energy, and it's good for you. That's the beauty of it.
Well, we've got some young roommates where we live here in Vernon, and they're into all manner of food. things that you and I would never eat, and they typically like to eat things that maybe I used to eat a long, long, long time ago but wouldn't touch now, but they even like this stuff. So when you find someone who's into the so-called junk food and the regular conventional garbage, and they typically don't like health food, you know, they don't like to eat it, they look at it and go weird or whatever, but they like to eat this stuff.
Well, it's like Mitchell said, he says, I'm so confused. Health food tastes good. Where somewhere along the way, when he was younger, they thought health food didn't taste good.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, maybe we shouldn't call it health food. We should call it something else. I don't know. But
well, they even have commercials on that about kids not telling them it's health food.
Yes.
Right, because they have this immediate impression that it's not going to be good. It's going to taste like sawdust or something.
Well, it's not health food per se. It's real food.
Right.
It's what it is. The other stuff is the processed garbage crap.
Which has become the norm and the standard, and everyone judges everything to that.
Exactly. So all we're doing is we're going back to our roots. But the coconut, you can use it for everything. What a phenomenal piece of work that the coconut is, you know. It's sustainable, the coconut.
Yeah, and as far as I know, I haven't seen anything yet about warnings or concerns or health issues with coconut.
No.
Seems to be relatively benign. And in many ways, extremely positive to consume.
Yes. So what I suggest is once I get this recipe down with the coconut flour, because I just kept adding things, so I don't have my measurements, but it turned out really good, whatever I made, the pumpkin loaf. Once I get that down, I'm going to let you know. And then I also use some Indian spices with it as well. So, because you know I'm on this Indian spice roll thing, so I'm definitely going to do that for our next SNU.
Yes, and so anything that one would use flour for, like in baking, you could use the coconut flour.
Yes.
Biscuits, all kinds of stuff you could get into.
Absolutely, but only use like a third of the amount. Do some research on it, find out some recipes, and you're really going to have fun with the coconut flour, and it's very light and airy and just tastes delicious. It's wonderful.
Okay, so thumbs up for the coconut.
Absolutely.
Right on. So who was our last month's special guest?
Last month's special guest were Drs. Richard and Carolee Seamus, the authors of Thyroid Power. Now, Thyroid Power, the book, is a classic, and everybody should be reading that book. As thyroid problems are manifesting themselves these days, hypothyroidism is more common than we think, and in women, more than men. 95% of postpartum is hypothyroid problems. So there's, you know, we really need to check out on the thyroid. And if you have a good doctor, they will check your thyroid. And it's like Carolee said, she says, you know, women go into the doctor and the doctor thinks she's nuts with all her symptoms that she's having. So they put them on antidepressants. No, if your doctor does that, she says, fire the doctor and go to a doctor that works with you and will get your thyroid checked out.
Yeah, the Thyroid Power book, that's what led me to the Seamus dynamic duo. You know, it was Richard mainly that I had listened to through my subscription to FMU with Dr. Jeffrey Bland, FMU. And so he interviewed Seamus, and that's how I read the book. But before that, I had read another book, actually years before, called Solve the Riddle of Illness. And this was near the beginning of this wave of thyroid consciousness. And then when I was very young, I saw a doctor at a health convention talking who was very impressive, and he talked about the fact that he thought everyone had some degree of thyroid problem as a social phenomenon because of how we live. And his name was Dr. Rogers, my doctor and friend. At that time, I reached out to him, and then I saw him first clinically in Vancouver. And the first thing he did was teach me how to do a home thermometer temperature test, which I did. And sure enough, my thyroid was low.
Mm-hmm.
Then tied in with that was the Udo Erasmus and the flaxseed oil and the omega-3. So it all came together, and then I realized that too much of the wrong fat and not enough of the right fat spells to some degree, problems with endocrine glands, and in particular the thyroid gland.
Right. Well, the thyroid gland is the most used, and hormone-mimicking substances in food and the environment is why the problem is so relevant today. thyroid problems, it's like a silent epidemic. Thyroid prescriptions are the top of the list of medications being prescribed. I think that's really interesting. And it's the most common autoimmune disease. It can be triggered by life events or triggered by pollutions with hormone-disrupting substances. If you have a family history, there could be problems. Puberty, after childbirth, menopause, a crisis in life, or surgery, after surgery, are the life events that may trigger thyroid problems. So we all have this going on. So really, even if you're feeling good, go get your thyroid checked out. It's really important. And as you mentioned, the home temperature test can be useful to find out who can develop thyroid problems. It's a diagnostic tool, they say, and a good approach, but not necessarily the gospel truth, right? So the low temperature, and a normal temperature would be 98.6. That's normal. But if you have anything lower than that, this could be a cause for concern, they say.
Yeah, and you establish that yourself on your own. You don't need a doctor. In fact, most doctors won't do that at all. They won't encourage you to take part in your health at all.
Right. Now, the thing that I found really interesting is there's certain kinds of symptoms need certain types of medication. So you may need to combine your medications, your natural medications. I found that very, very interesting. And the thing about Carol Lee, she's a certified holistic nurse. And being a certified holistic nurse gives her a broader way of looking at health and illness than a registered nurse, per se. She has more outlets, other modalities to treat patients. And what a holistic nurse's main goal is to educate the patient so that they can make their own choices. Hello?
Well, that's what natural medicine, molecular medicine, alternative, complementary medicine is all about. The fundamental essence is causality and education and patient involvement, patient-centered treatment. You don't treat the illness, you talk to the patient, you find out where their head is at, you get into their emotional life, their stresses, their illness, the whole thing. And that is conveniently sidestepped by, you know, conventional medicine, and just you wait in line, you see the doctor for like 2 minutes, you get a prescription, and that's it. And that's just completely unacceptable.
Exactly. So if you're a personal trainer or a consultant in the health industry or even work in a health food store, and you're having your clients and customers, tell them to go to their doctor and get some thyroid tests done. You know, they'd be surprised at some interesting findings that they will find, because some of the symptoms, anxiety, high blood pressure, you know, that the thyroid gland is the most used in the body, and so, you know, it's working overtime. So go get it checked out and tell your clients to go get their thyroid checked out. And if it works that it's fine, then you know.
Well, you and I both have thyroid sensitivity, and the thing about natural medicine is that everybody's unique, but tyrosine is an amino acid that you and I both take, and I recommend this to everyone regardless, because it is called the anti-stress amino acid. But tyrosine and iodine are essential to have available to manufacture thyroxine. Now, if tyrosine is depleted by stress, and everybody's affected by stress of one form, shape, or another, doesn't it make sense to help sustain the pool? There's no toxicity, there's no risk. We take a couple of grams per day. I like to take mine on an empty stomach first thing in the morning when I squeeze my fresh juice and add that, you know, tablespoon of ascorbic acid, calcium ascorbate, that you and I share, and we down the hatch. And I think that is a wonderful habit. If you have thyroid health problems, by all means, and this should be a mainstay, but if you don't, why not take the same thing that treats it to prevent it?
Absolutely. And you know, the beauty of SNU, and if you're listening, keep listening to SNU for the rest of your life, because Corey does a lot of research to find these people. We both do. And when we find something that is pertinent to lifestyle and health, we get these people, these fantastic experts in the field of sports nutrition, health and fitness and wellness, holistic health. You know, and it really is wonderful to hear an interview from them. And it also helps you keep on track. It helps you to tweak the program that you're on right now, or it can put you back on track. Or it can say, yeah, I'm doing the right thing by listening to these people. I'm on the right track. So, you know, keep listening to SNU, because this particular one rung a bell for me about the combinations of the different thyroid medications that you can take. They're all natural, right, to help different symptoms that you may have. So thank you very much, Dr. Seamus. We just love your interview.
Right on. That was a good one. So moving on now, what is your hot topic?
Well, my hot topic for this month, keeping in light of the thyroid, would be everything always works out. Now, the acronym for WORK is willing to have order to repeat the knowledge. Willing, order, repetition, knowledge. And, you know, when I say everything always works out, for those, and I've been there, you've been there, and all our listeners have all been there, we've all had times in our life where we just don't know how we're going to cope. The coping of the everyday stress of something that's happened in your life, and sometimes when something happens in your life, then something else happens, and something else happens, and it seems to keep coming all at once, and you just go, how am I going to cope with this? Well, not only taking good care of yourself by exercising, eating right, trying to get a lot of sleep, you have to know that you have to work at coping with stress. You just don't sit in the corner and wait for something to happen. You actually have to work at it. The phone doesn't ring and all of a sudden your life has changed. You have to make it happen. So I find that works for me on a personal level is my dancing. When I'm teaching a dance class, I don't think about anything else. The world can pass me by. I'm so absorbed in my dancing and my creative outlet of expression, I'm a happy camper. So I believe that a creative outlet of expression, now I'm not talking about exercising and going for a run and going to the gym. I'm talking about creativity, such as hooking a rug, quilting, playing an instrument, music, dancing, singing, painting, drawing, doing something that is creative, building furniture. You know, the funny thing is that I went to the farmer's market the other day, and there are so, not only fruits and vegetables and flowers, there are so many jewelry and furnitures and candle booths there. And these people told me their story, that it all started off with them just doing it as a hobby. And then it ended up, they got all these orders, it ended up that their passion and their hobby ended up to be their life's work, and they're making money from it. So I'm not saying that's what you want to do, but this creative outlet of expression is so vital to your health and coping skills.
Yes. Now, I like to walk because, for a lot of reasons, actually. You know, I wear my headphones, I listen to my tutorials, I look around, I like to move. There's a functional element to it. I really, truly believe that if you don't walk a lot on a routine basis, your muscles, your joints, your bones that allow you to move and walk will literally decay and fall apart. It's just that simple. But the other one relates to when you get injured as an athlete, and then the coach says, walk it off, walk it off. And we all know that, like when you get injured or you get the wind knocked out of you or you get a bump or whatever, you kind of like, once you get up, you sort of start walking around to regain your senses, to regain your normality, to walk it off. So I think that a lot of the stress, mental and emotional, can be walked off, literally. And I mean this literally. You just walk it off as opposed to retaining it. I'm thinking now of Hoffer when he said all this adrenaline gets converted into adrenochrome. It's toxic. It damages the liver. It damages the brain. And you get a lot of these psychotic episodes that lead to medication when actually all these people should be walking 5-10 miles a day.
And it depends on where you walk to. Don't walk down a busy highway or a busy street. You need to have peace. You need to have fresh air, a walk by the lake, a walk by the ocean, a walk in the forest, somewhere where there's peace and serenity and quiet and solitude. Very, very important to be on your own and quiet. Then you can think. And then, as I mean, I've said this many times in SNU before, you start walking and that movie goes on in your head and you hate the world and everybody in it and you have a pity party and then you keep walking and walking and all of a sudden it dissipates. It's gone. And then you have peace of mind. That's a beautiful feeling.
Yeah, and then, of course, from a practical point of view, you can walk to the gym, you can walk to the market, you can like what we do, we like to choose to live in a place where walking is common and where people walk, like in New York City or parts of Europe or Venice Beach, you know, just like, or in Hawaii, Waikiki, you walk to the gym, you walk to the market, you walk to the beach, walk, and you get things done at the same time. It's how we all used to live, but we no longer live that way. For the most part, people drive in their cars.
Well, they drive a block, you know, but we have chosen this as a lifestyle choice, right?
Yeah, and it's because it keeps you well and sane. As we see people around us through our aging paradigm in our 50s and soon to be 60, we see people basically going nuts and having, you know, all kinds of issues. Managing stress seems to be the greatest challenge for them.
Well, you know, it's my sister's 60th birthday today. Yes, my sister is 60. And the first thing I thought about is, wow, I'm getting older. When my sister turns 60, that means I'm getting older too. So, you know, you have to be creative. Get creative because life is short. And you want to be healthy and well. You want to be creative. You want to have a lot of friends. You want to laugh. Get laughing as well. Laughing is fun. Laughing's good. And that's my hot topic for today.
Yeah, speaking of laughter, I can't wait to see Dumb and Dumber 2.
Neither can I.
Yeah, now laughing is critical, essential. It's one of the few things that humans can do. I don't know if there is any other animal that can laugh. I was just watching a video talking about whether or not, you know, animals have consciousness and whether they can feel pain and all this and that. But in spite of knowing or not knowing, we need to laugh. Humans need, I think we need to exercise. We need to get lots of sleep. We need to, eat whole food and live well. But part of the living well is laughter.
Did I not have a good laugh last night?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I swear I almost peed my pants. I had to hold my legs together. I laughed so hard, I cried. We just bought a new blender, and it came in a package. And all that puffy plastic, it was all puffed up, and so you put it in. You wanted to go in and say to Mitchell that you were all buffed up. But what I did is I said, take that out and let's give you a big stomach. So I gave you a big stomach, and on your sides were all hanging down, and you had a big gut. Oh my gosh, I just had never seen you look like that. But I thought it was funny, and I hadn't laughed like that for a long time.
And then you laughed, and then I caught the laugh buzz, and then I couldn't stop laughing.
And then Mitchell comes out and goes, what's going on? What's going on?
He starts laughing.
And he starts laughing. I said, I've never seen Corey look like this before. You know, that's what you look like with the big stomach and the big sides, the big obliques or whatever were fat and oh. I don't know. You had to be there, but it was really funny.
Well, I know, and then I talked to Deanna last night, and her father-in-law just passed away, you know, and she's experiencing that loss. And we got into a laughing fit, too, which was super healthy and super therapeutic for her. She thanked me so much for it at the end because laughter is how you dig your way out of depression. And depressed people don't find anything funny. They can't laugh.
Excuse me. It was Deanna's father, not her father-in-law. That would be you.
Right. Okay. Right. Yeah. No, I'm still here, very much alive.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Her father passed away. Yes. And that's difficult for all of us, some more, some less. But the indigenous native people, like Native American Indians and Aboriginals, I've seen them myself. I've been around them. They spend a lot of time laughing. They laugh at almost everything. And I think that's what's missing in our society. Of course, laughter is a commonality when you get groups of people together. Some of these societies are very serious, and these people, they don't talk and they don't communicate and everything's serious, and it's just like, wow, man, like, let's find something funny about that.
Exactly. So laugh it up, folks. And it is a good time because it's Halloween time coming up. If you're into Halloween, get dressed up and have a great time. It really is a fun time. I don't believe in it, the evil and all of that. I just think, I look at the kids getting dressed up in their favorite costumes, and believe me, I've seen a lot of adults get a really good time on Halloween as well, getting dressed up and living out your fantasies, being your favorite superhero or whatever. It's just a time to let loose and to live a fantasy. And I, you know, and get over the evils of Halloween and all of that. It is a major, major festival.
Yeah. My favorite costume is Clark Kent. I just need a pair of glasses.
Yeah.
And apparently, All you have to do, if you don't wear glasses, is put a pair of glasses like that on, and nobody will be able to recognize you.
Yes, dear.
Right? Because I always wondered, how the hell don't they know that that's Superman? I mean, he looks like Superman. He is Superman, and all he's got is his pair of glasses on.
Yes, exactly.
So that's my new costume. It's really easy. It's very affordable, cost-effective, and, you know, it's simple. So that's what I'm going as Clark Kent.
The only trouble you're going to have is finding a phone booth. They don't have them anymore.
That's true. You're right.
So there you have it.
Yeah, good stuff. Okay, what's your final word?
My final word is by Conan O'Brien. This Halloween, the most popular mask is Arnold Schwarzenegger mask.
Yay!
And the best part? With a mouthful of candy, you'll sound just like him.
I'll be back.